Today on the first episode of the AV Podcast for 2019, we discuss the Surviving R. Kelly documentary. Yep, we pretty much go down that rabbit hole. So first off, I'd like to apologize to some of you for not getting this out sooner. This podcast was originally recorded last Wednesday on January the 9th with South Shore AV family member Headley, who's been a past contributor to the show and the blog. But right after recording, or shortly after that, just on a personal note, I got real sick for the past week, so everything got put on the back burner. So it's a bit of a late post, but you know, I still wanted to get it out to y'all. So with that said, we share all of our thoughts and reactions on the documentary series, plus much more. All right, so I hope you enjoy it. South Shore AV is available wherever you listen to your podcasts. Under the South Shore AV name, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and Stitcher to listen and subscribe. All right, so go ahead and rate the shows as well, whether you like it or not. I won't be mad if you give out the 5-star rating. I'll thank you in advance. So as of the start of the new year, you can follow South Shore AV on Instagram for any updates for any upcoming episodes and projects coming out this year. Find us on Instagram under the name South Shore AV. You can also listen and subscribe always to the website. And to catch up on my entire catalog, make sure you subscribe to SouthShoreAV.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAV.com. It's the AV Podcast with Cal C on South Shore AV Radio. We're just going to get right into it right now. Headley, let me just ask you, what were your thoughts on Surviving R. Kelly?
So it's funny. You had put out the link that the doc series was coming, and I had no intentions of watching it. Like I was gonna watch it eventually, type thing. But I just happened to have the TV on Lifetime when the first two parts was playing on Thursday night, and I couldn't turn it off. And from there, I was like, yo. I hit some friends up. I was like, yo, you guys got to watch this. It's basically a lot of stuff I already kind of, I would say privy, but I knew about it because I had been watching the storyline, but it got deep. I knew surface stuff. Like we had our thoughts and our theories, but it was a lot worse than I anticipated.
Yeah, I wasn't surprised by it. It was disturbing. It's kind of like a documented file on how like just assorted behavior just went unchecked for like 25 years, and it got worse every year to the point where it hit its worst case scenario. Now, it explains the whole progress from, you know, for those who haven't seen it, it explains the whole progress from Malia all the way down to, you know, to Sparkle's cousin and down to the sex cult a couple of years ago. And you weren't shocked by it. You know what I mean? You weren't necessarily shocked by it. You were just more disgusted and disturbed. And just you didn't realize how freaking deep it went. You know what I mean? Like in terms of the details and all that stuff. Like, cause you know, I mean, you're living the everyday life. You're not thinking about R. Kelly. You know what I mean? So it's like, you're not, obviously you're not privy to all this information until something like this comes out. And it's in your face, but I think that was probably the biggest thing for me. Because I know I sent the link to in one of our chat groups. I sent the link for like the trailer of the preview for it, but I even forgot about it myself until I think you reminded me, like maybe like over the weekend, like, yo, I just saw 1 and 2, and yo, it's crazy. And I'm like, yeah, exactly. Shit, I forgot it was on. So then, you know, yeah, just watching the whole thing, just in general, it was like the depths that they went to. It's you know. If all the details in this is true, it's straight up, it's disturbing, you know.
And one correction, that it was Sparkle's niece, not her cousin.
Oh, sorry, niece. Oh, my bad. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, just
it's funny because we were talking about this offline because like some of the stories and some of the details, like, and you know, we'll get into this in a minute, but like it kind of brought us back in terms of certain details, like even with the whole sex cult thing when that popped up, like. For me, I just, like, even when it happened a couple of years ago, just remembering back then, like, I just shook my head because I'm just like, yo, why is this guy still on the streets? I mean, we didn't know the details of it then, but you're just like, man, like, this guy just has, issues with sex. You know what I mean?
Well, you know what? To answer that question, like, why was it going for so long? And, you know, we talked about why is this coming out now? Why is this docuseries happening now in 2019, sorry. And I think it's a myriad of things. I think one, like we had talked about, where the victims, you know, they have to come to a place where they're mentally and emotionally ready to talk about this. Not to mention a lot of these people were teenagers when this first happened. So they're still like young adults now. Then, not to mention the Me Too movement that's happening now.
And Time's Up.
Exactly. Yeah. So that has brought, you know, the whole notion of sex exploitation and the music and basically just an entertainment industry as a whole. And then three is, as you mentioned, we talked about that he ain't doing no hits no more. Before, as you said, we talked about this, that his best hits came between 2002 and 2008 when that trial was on hiatus. He was just putting out heat checks after heat checks after heat checks. And he was too valuable to the industry, to his label, to the corporation. But now, I mean, his last music ventures hasn't been too great in terms of success with streaming and album sales and all that stuff. So like, he's not valuable to anybody. So they're like, yo, whoever was maybe trying to hold that out before is like, hey, put it out. That's new money we can get off him now.
Yeah, I mean, which you know, at the same time, it's that still ain't right. You know what I mean? In the grand scheme of things,
that's disturbing. Yeah,
it still ain't right. It's still
reality.
Because that's my thing. Like, it's like, is this only because it's kind of remixed into our minds now? Like, we're at the apex of our emotional peak after like watching this documentary. Is why, you know, everybody's so mad. But like, to me, he should have been there earlier. Like, he should have been already locked up in jail. And it's something, you know, the recurring theme that they keep saying in this documentary, which I think it's kind of one of the universal points, which there was many, but one of the universal points in this was like, if this was happening to blonde, you know, teenage blonde girls, you know, girls named Mary Beth and, you know, Elizabeth Sue, this guy would have been in jail 10, 15 years ago. Like, there wouldn't even have been a Chocolate Factory album. You know what I mean? Like, that would have been a speedy trial and that would have been it.
You know? And I also believe that the time and era that we in with social media, back in the day, it was so easy to silence these people because everybody has a voice now. You know what I mean? Mm. You put something out. I'm not even too sure how the whole Weinstein thing came out at first. I don't know if it was through social media or not. But now,
the Me Too police got him.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. So look at Dwight Howard. Look at anybody that's in some kind of like sex scandal. If you have enough followers, or if you get a message and it gets tweeted, it gets retweeted enough, that's like pulling a thread that just unravels everything. Which back in 2002, we didn't have that.
Yeah, I mean, I hear you, but I like, for me, I think that's like one of the biggest questions I have to ask. Is like, I still kind of ask it, like, why now? Because I think personally, like, after he went through that trial and he got off, we discussed this many times, not even from this weekend, but over the years, from that Tory interview on BET, like, to me, that's the point where that shit should have been like, there should have been pitchforks coming after this guy from that point, from the first question he asked. You know what I mean? Like, for the first question he answered, I mean, that should have been the peak moment where everybody should have been just on tilt at that point. You know what I mean? And that interview kind of went away. He kind of went away. And then he started popping up with new stuff. You know what I mean? It wasn't as hot as like it was, you know, like the last, you know, from 1993 to like 2006 or whatever, you know, that run. Like, wasn't as hot as that run. But like, he was still successful. He's still doing shows. He's still putting out albums. You know what I mean? It's like nobody thought of it. And don't get me wrong. I'm not blaming Dream Hampton for only putting out this doc in 2019. You know what I mean? But like, to me, it should have just been there years ago, regardless how great of a talent he is. Now, I'm being respectful to everything that you're saying about the victims and everything else. I'm just saying, like, the public outcry for it, because I'm seeing the rage and stuff, especially, like, you know, looking on social media and everything else this past week, and people are so angry, and I'm just like, but where was the anger prior to this? Because, you know,
but you know what? I have to cut you off there, because you do have some anger. You definitely have anger, but you definitely have still some supporters, which is ridiculous in my opinion. And, you know, I was going to school in Chicago when this whole thing broke out, and I was beside myself.
You got to give him the whole story, because you know what I mean. Like, give him the story.
I was living in Chicago when this went down. I was in school, and I was beside myself, because the urban station, how people were calling in here, and you would think that they'll be ripping R. Kelly, but they had his back like 1,000%. They were ripping the girls, saying these little fast girls, you know what they know what they're getting into. You know, they try to act like they, you know, they try to act like they big. And I'm going to myself the whole time. I'm like, yo, this is a 13. Because at the time, I thought she was 13. This is like a 13-year-old child. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, how are they putting the onus on the child? And R. Kelly had to be at least 30 at that point. more than 30, because I think he's 50 now.
Yeah.
So he's in mid-30s or something like that. And I'm going to myself like, yo, if anybody in our age had done that, and we were in our early 20s at the time.
Yeah.
Yo, you wouldn't even want to associate with us. And then, to make matters worse, I knew people that was in the industry, or knew people that was in the industry, and it was an open secret that R. Kelly used to go to high schools to try to bang on girls. He used to buy them little sneakers, to try to get little ins on them. The whole thing that they're talking about with the chicks in the studio, that was an open secret. So
yeah, being in Chicago, you would.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, and these weren't necessarily industry people.
Yeah,
this was like common knowledge. Like if you knew enough people in Chicago, I wasn't from Chicago, but if you knew enough people from Chicago, you heard the stories.
Yeah, so it was out there. Like, it was out there running rampant. Yeah,
exactly. So to know that. I'm not to say that I don't know who's calling into the radio station, but I'm just saying that to know that that Chi-Town knows that this is an open secret, how R. Kelly is, and then for them to defend him so strongly, I was like, wow.
Yeah, it's disgusting.
Wow.
It's disgusting.
It was real talk, Calvin, it was at a point that I didn't like talking about R. Kelly in Chicago with Chi-Town people, because you just didn't know, because you didn't know what side of the fence
they're
people
gonna
were going to be at.
You
know what I mean? So it's like, all right, whatever, man.
But you know, the part that's still crazy is, I mean, you're still seeing the split down the middle in terms of like the support. Because remember, like, he had his birthday party this past week.
Oh my!
And that club was packed. Everybody singing word for word. You know what I mean? Like, it's
even the links that you sent me. Like, if you look at the comments, it's still people split down the middle. Like, you know, why are you trying to put our peoples on blast? And I'm like, man, and this is. What, 25 years? So it's like, it's people, not 25, but some of the allegation going as far as that when you think about
Aaliyah and stuff.
Aaliyah, yeah, and all that stuff. So if it's split down now, imagine how it was back then.
Yeah, I know.
Especially talking to Chi-Town people.
It's crazy to see, because I'm, you know, as you said before, like, you're looking at the Spotify numbers, and it's, you know, he had a spike in the levels of the Spotify numbers, so it's like, people are still battling with it. I was saying before, like, you look on social media and you're looking at the different conversations, you're seeing it. You're seeing people still like, yo, should I dump my R. Kelly CDs? And you're seeing a faction of people saying, you know, like, hell yeah, you know, what are you doing? You're disgusting if you still have it. Then you're seeing the other people like, listen, man, I, you know, whatever happens, I'm still banging this, my R. Kelly albums. I'm not throwing them away. So it's like a divisive line. You know what I mean? You're seeing what people, when it comes to that, like, it's a little crazy, but yeah,
and it's crazy. It's funny, you know, talking about this. You know, I talked to, you talk to other friends, and they have their own story. Then they said, like, yo, it was known that in every city that this guy toured in, he was going to the mall. And it wasn't like this guy was shopping. He was shopping, but he wasn't shopping for clothes.
Right, right.
Like,
And I mean, you know, like with this podcast, I'm making it a purpose to focus specifically on R. Kelly. Like we can go down the rabbit hole of different people doing stuff in the entertainment industry and stuff, but you know, that could be like a 3-hour podcast.
And I don't want to be hypocritical. Like I definitely was a person that if Stepping in the Name of Love came on, I mean, I was definitely two-stepping when it was being played. However, it's another thing where if you actually purchasing his music, going to his concerts, etc., and just like we talked about, a lot of people out of sight, out of mind. As they said, people compartmentalize things where they think about R. Kelly, the entertainer, and they're not thinking about his personal life.
Mm-hmm.
However, with audiovisual and how when something is well put together, where it's one thing to hear a story and to kind of mix and match stories and depict and try to decipher and infer certain things. It's another thing when you see it in black and white like this, right? I'd be steadfast for people who are still rocking with R. Kelly for them to watch the series and tell me if you can still rock the same way as you was beforehand. And, you know, yes, he went through a trial, and obviously there's two sides to every story. I'm a big believer where there's smoke, there's fire. And when you have so many victims, you cannot tell me that everybody's lying.
Right.
Like, come on, man. You're purposely putting on blinders.
Well, it's funny because going back to those days back in Chicago, we're both in university those times. And I know even during those times we definitely used to share our thoughts about that whole thing as well as everybody else, I'm sure, during that period in time. But like, I mean, I didn't see the video. I saw bits and pieces of like especially like the room, like the, I think they called it the Colorado room. Like I remember seeing like snippets of that, you know what I mean? Where it's like they're showing like the room and he's setting up the tripod and all this shit. And I'm like, you're looking at that video, you're like, God damn, that's either if that's not R. Kelly, that's an incredible stunt double then, if that's the case. You know what I mean? Like we've seen enough R. Kelly videos to know what this man looks like. You know, we know that was him.
I say it's funny, but it's when they were talking about the part where in the video somebody's actually calling his name. Like, yes. Hey, Kels, I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
Back in the day. I was like, wow. And this guy is still trying to play that this isn't him, even though people's calling his name out. Hey, but he paid good money. So, because clearly he, you know, that wasn't just the courts just getting him off. He definitely having Sparkle's niece and her family saying that that wasn't her. And you know what? And it's funny. At first, I really thought that maybe they were trying to protect her because they didn't want her name to be tied to this for the rest of her life, which I can understand. But then in a document, what I'm reading, watching, and seeing how a family member of the supposed victim is doing music with R. Kelly years and years later, he's still
playing guitar for them.
Yeah, it just makes you swallow hard, man. And then I believe, you know how we were kind of putting bits and pieces to dock together and trying to do timeline. It sounds like that same girl, whoever she is, was still with R. Kelly even after the fact, after the trial, which is just mind-boggling
It's insane. It's insane.
Mind-boggling.
Because like going back to like that time period, like 2002, whatever it was, I mean, first of all, I think they undersold it because, you know, they make it seem like it was the DVDs were all over the place in Chicago. Like, yo, the internet was at its, you know, was in its prime at that point. That shit was worldwide. You know what I mean? Like that shit was like worldwide. I think they undersold how prevalent that link or that video was. That was all over the world. I didn't go to Chicago to visit you to go see that. You know what I mean? Like that was,
if you really wanted to see the video, you could see the video.
Yeah, like it was out there.
You know what I mean? If you It was out there. Exactly.
Everybody saw it. Like, even Chappelle made a joke about it. You know what I mean? Like, it was, everybody saw that. You know, and it's funny because at that point I was like, yo, I can't. Once you see, you know what I mean? Like, you can't unsee that anymore. You know what I mean? Like, you can't see the person the same after that. How could you? You know what I mean? You're like, I mean, you're thinking back of his track listing and Seems Like You're Ready and Sex Me and Bump and Grind. You're thinking of all that shit. And you're just like, yo, how could you listen to that shit the same? And I'm saying that from back then. You know what I mean? So to take you to Step in the Name of Love now, like Ignition and all that stuff, but Step in the Name of Love, Headley, first of all, music is a powerful tool. And you can see why people get caught up with supporting him and not wanting to like stray from, you know, from supporting his music. Because when Step in the Name of Love came out, right? And left many people in a weird space. Because I was in a weird space. I'm just being real. I'm just admitting it. I was in a weird space because you wanted to cut this guy off, but Jesus Christ, you're like, this fucking song is incredible. This song was incredible. And you're sitting there like, should I listen to this? Like, you're sitting there like, because that's what I'm saying. The pull of music is that powerful to people that I think to a lot of people where it had you sitting there contemplating playing his music. Now, I never was a person that really bought R. Kelly stuff to begin with, as much as I liked his music back then. But after the whole video scandal came out, like, I, at that point I was like, I'm never buying any single, anything that he does. So I never bought Step in the Name of Love. I never bought the Chocolate Factory, you know, all that stuff. But like, it put everybody in a weird space because, and they mentioned this in the documentary, and we've been saying this, Eddie, how long have we been talking about this? Like, seriously, how long have we been talking about that point where it's like, the stuff that he did musically, like he was pitching classics, you know what I mean? Yep. Like, he was pitching classics, so that by the time, like, I remember having conversations with people even back then where it was like, yeah, but come on, did they really? Come on, though. You sure that was him, though? You know what I mean? And all that came.
Yo, he put the blinders on people with the music, man.
Yeah,
for real.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
He definitely had put people on pause and. You talk about putting on a roadblock, a facade, a mirage. Like, it got people thinking about him as an artist again and not thinking about this hideous crime that he's yet to go to court for.
Right.
One thing I wanted to touch on because...
And sorry, before you do that...
Okay, go ahead.
And why I'm going back to the fact that music is such a powerful tool. Like, he swayed people's minds just off of his craft. He swayed people's minds. Yeah. Now, and I'll stand by this. Like, if R. Kelly was R. Kelly the athlete playing for the White Sox or playing for the Chicago Bulls, I think he would have gone to jail because I think public pressure from the team and all that stuff would have made a team say, especially you see with the NFL now, they would have just cut him. You know what I mean? Or put him on some kind of leave or administrative leave or some kind of shit and hopefully try to squash the fires that way. Whereas... Because as an athlete or as if you're doing sports or what have you, or an actor, like, you have to still see them to appreciate their work. You know what I mean? So you still have to like pull up a video. You still have to put on your TV, especially them times. And you got to watch what they do best. With music, you don't have to see them. You can just, you can travel anywhere. You can, you know, you have your headphones, your Discman, or your Walkman at the time. So that can travel with you. That can go with you to your car, to the gym and the clubs. You know what I mean? So it's like that just stays circulating in your mind, in your system. Your friends are playing it. So it's like after a while, it's like it just becomes comforting. You know what I mean? Which is unfortunate. But that's how powerful music is. You know what I mean? But sorry, go on to what you're going to say.
No, well, you know what? The last thing I'll touch on what you're saying also is same with me. I didn't go buy his music and all that stuff after the fact. But I think what a lot of people don't realize, or not that they don't know this, when they go purchase his music or when they go buy a paraphernalia of R. Kelly, whatever the case may be, is you're funding the artist. And we're more savvy now that you realize that our money is what keeps them quote unquote alive. Just look at the backlash that this docuseries has had, and it hasn't even been a week.
Yeah.
Where you sent me the link where he's getting investigated in Georgia. He's his studio in Chicago, he's going to get evicted. Mm-hmm. Shows are repeatedly getting canceled, and it's one thing if you can't get him in the court, dry their paper up. You know what I mean? Because mm-hmm. trust me, once he's not, I'm a big proponent that he has all these yes men, people in his corner because he feeds them.
Oh, we got to discuss right? that too. Holy shit!
I know.
Go on, go on.
Sorry, he feeds them, but trust me, when that money train is over, you're going to see how quickly people are going to flip on him. And if there's a chance that he gets convicted or charged or whatever, it's going to come with new evidence from his camp once the crumbs is finished.
Can they go back and arrest part of the old camp? Sorry, but go on. I mean, Jesus Christ.
Well, it's funny because we talked about that. We don't know what the statute of limitation and some of these things are, right?
Right.
You know, without knowing the law to the T and you know the ins and outs, who knows? But but we know from the document from the docuseries, some of the victims was as recently as 2012, I think was the latest.
I think
the latest one.
I think even more recent than that.
Well, you're right because that's
like a couple
that
years
they
ago.
Met them.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was exactly. Those were the dates that they met them, and then
it was up until like last year, even.
Yeah, you're right. Exactly. Yeah. I think. I'm talking about those are the dates that they first met them. You're right. Yeah, because some of the stuff with the Atlanta one specifically, and it's funny because not funny again. That investigation where they're looking in Georgia is because of that victim who left his house that was in Atlanta. So.
Right.
Yeah, you know, I mean, they may not be able to get on some things because it might be too dated, but again, he's been doing this thing for years. One thing that you saw that he started to get smarter on is that he waited until these girls were of age or the age of consent before he started, you know, putting his full,
right.
all his full hands and nails into them, right?
Right.
But still... Even if you're not going to get him on underage statutory rape, the mental and physical and anguish and abuse that this guy was putting people through, hopefully we haven't heard the last of this.
Keep going.
No, go ahead. Because I mean, there's one point I really want to touch on before we end this. So finish your thought on this first.
No, I just wanted to touch on the point that you're making about like the support and stuff. Going back to that for a second, like something about North America. You say in the United States, I think the United States is bigger with this, but you know, being in Canada, I think we're also a part of this too. And it's funny for me to say this, being that like my podcast is like sports and about the culture and stuff, but we definitely, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, there's definitely spend currency on celebrity in North America, you know, and you see that continually, like just like I said earlier, just in terms of going on social media and just watching different conversations and seeing people just split down the middle in terms of like who's going to support them and who's not going to support them, and arguments are breaking out and people are still like kind of still to this day trying to separate, you know, the man from the art. It's just funny to me, but like it's not surprising because we traffic in celebrity here. We traffic in celebrity here in North America. That's what we do. And that's one of the things that we do. That's one of the resources that we offer to the world, you know. And I'll tell you a quick story. Like, it reminded me of he has a song called, I think it's called Backyard Party. And the reason why I say this is because they had, I don't know what award show it was. It was a couple of years ago. Maybe like, I don't know if it was Soul Train or BET. I can't remember which award show it was, but they had like a Lifetime Achievement Award for him. And he's doing this whole performance, Headley. He's got like, he basically turned the stage into a cookout. So there's people actually barbecuing in the grill. You know, he's standing on a picnic table. You know, people are dancing with the red cups. The whole crowd's going back and forth. And I'm just watching this and I'm just like, man, what the fuck is going on here, man? You know, I'm like, yo, like this guy's just free and clear. You know what I mean? Like, just watching it, just like, yo, like, this is just, it's crazy. It's like life went on. You know what I mean? I'm like, wow. Like, yeah.
Some people are in a trance. You know what I mean? It's like they're almost like they're under a spell.
Yeah, it's just crazy to me. Like, when people seeing that whole concept of him, you know, being in the cookout and just, you know, partying and all that stuff, like, people, like, it touches a nerve in a sense where, like, because that's reminiscent of things that we did. You know what I mean? As a child, even as, you know, growing into young adults, is, you know, we spend time with the family. You know what I mean? Listen to music, eat food, and, you know, break bread with our loved ones. You know, dance and have a good time. Like, that's stuff we do. You know, in the Black community, or that's the stuff we do. So seeing a song like that, and again, that song was basically new to me because I didn't even listen to R. Kelly's new stuff at that point. But like hearing the song, I'm like, look how people are so drawn and unified to this guy still. You know, even after everything that went down, like it's kind of like out of sight of the mind. But that speaks to the celebrity thing. You know what I mean? Like, it's once he got off, it's like, that was basically it. Like, we just, you know what I mean? Like, he just kind of went away and that was it. And now when he pops up with a song, it's like, oh shit, yeah, R. Kelly, yo, we got a two-step, let's go. You know what I mean?
Again, it's fame, right? They're addicted to fame. I've said it, like, if you sampled and you asked somebody, what would you prefer? Would you prefer to get either a Grammy or an Emmy or a Nobel Prize? I'm telling you, they're taking a Grammy and Emmy. Because that gets, even though it's not better notoriety, the Nobel Prize is far more
prestigious.
Prestigious and given back to the world more so than an Oscar and Emmy. But an Oscar and Emmy, you can get 200,000 followers with that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's all about Instagram envy. It's the world that we live in now. People go broke for followers. It's like the new crack.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of people look at celebrities, look at them as almost like they're avatars. Like they're not human.
Yeah.
And because of that, they put them on a pedestal when they really shouldn't at the end of the day.
Yeah, because, you know, everybody's human. They put exactly their pants on just like we do, right?
And exactly. And one thing, I think what hits me harder now than when I first watched this is that when I, back in 2002, I was a 23-year-old man, or 25-year-old man, sorry. I'm watching it now as a father of two. And having a daughter, and it just puts a whole different spin realm to this entire story. Mm. And as you said, never victim blaming, but I wonder what some of these parents were thinking, especially after he went on trial. I don't give a shit that he beat the rap. He went on trial for this, but yeah, you're innocent until proven guilty. But again, if I'm dealing with my child, I don't give a shit if you got off scot-free or what. If I feel that, you know what, a small percentage of me, a 5% of me, thinks you might have pissed on a teenager, that's enough for me to say, you know what, I'm pumping the brakes on this.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't need no trial and jury to tell me, well, he got off, so now that means I should put my guard down and put the faith that he's going to do right by my child. Fuck no. And you wonder sometimes, like, you know, are these parents trying to live through some of their, you know, their childhood
dreams
that they wanted, stuff, or something, yeah, like that. Because to me, it doesn't make sense some of these stories, it wasn't smooth. There was definitely hiccups along the way before it went to full throttle. We can't get in contact with our child anymore. I just don't understand what some of these parents are thinking. And I know sometimes, you know, you got single family homes, and I know R. Kelly, he preyed on that. He made sure to find somebody that had a structure or a foundation that was maybe in shambles. But some of the parents certainly were in the privy of what was going on. It's one thing when you didn't know, and I'm not, you know, not justifying it, yes or no, but I just don't know what some of these parents were thinking.
Well, it speaks back to the currency of celebrity, right? Like, it's something where somebody will put their trust in that person because it's you know, it's Headley, the superstar. You know what I mean? I'm not sure. Maybe I shouldn't use you as an example, but you know what I mean? Like,
I get it.
You know what I mean? But they're put on that pedestal. So it's like, well, this person is a good person because look, he's famous. He does this, he does that. Hey, maybe he can help, you know, like my child.
And
people, you know, people fall privy to that all the time, a lot, right?
And I get that, Calvin. If he never went to trial with a video pissing on a 13-year-old. I get that.
Right.
You'll give them the benefit of the doubt that this is some celebrity that they're going to do good. And I'm talking specifically in cases where all this came out. And you're like, he was found innocent, so I guess it's cool. To me, that's like, I don't know, that's not an excuse. That's not a reason. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was just taken aback on those instances, just looking at that in those glasses as a parent now, as opposed to when I first was going through this.
Mm-hmm.
It hits you a little bit harder because you're thinking like, damn, that could be my child. You know what I mean?
You put yourself in their shoes.
Exactly.
And everything, you know how it is. Everything changes when you have kids, you know what I mean? But I take you back to a commercial back in 93, ironically around the time when R. Kelly was really bubbling, but like the Charles Barkley commercial, I'm not a role model, right?
Yeah.
that kind of speaks to a situation like this, meaning like just because you see them on TV and they, and I'm not saying this for everybody, of course, but like just because they, you know, somebody like this can entertain you with their craft, it doesn't mean they should be, you know, teaching your kids. Like, it just because of that, you know what I mean? Like, just, you know what I'm trying to say? Like, it's just...
Yeah, no, I get it completely.
Yeah. Like, it's, you know what I mean? Sorry, go ahead.
And you know what really pisses me off? Is, I get it. R. Kelly's not the only one in Hollywood doing this. We know that. We know there's an underworld, an undercurrent, a belly, that if it got flushed out, we wouldn't be very happy are of the some of the stuff that would be unveiled. But can we stop trying to support R. Kelly with the notion, well, why are they not doing this with other white celebrities or other cases that doesn't, you know, hasn't to do with a one of our own, so to speak? I don't get it, yo. If a kettle is black, a kettle is black. In the sense that if it's wrong, it's wrong. Two wrongs don't make a right. It's uncalled for if other people are doing it and they're putting the cover over it. Absolutely. But don't use that as an argument as to why we should be off R. Kelly's back because they're not ridiculing, you know, Sam and Billy in the same context. Who gives a shit? It's bad. It's horrible. So if it's R. Kelly or if it's somebody else, don't defend that. That to me really like is unnerving, man.
So in a sense, it's like what you're trying to say is basically like, yo, just you understand that that you want to support your own, but like you're not supporting this fool.
Yeah, yo, that's what I'm saying. Like, there's a place and time for that. This isn't one of them.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't one of them. Don't use any arguments and use this as your case study. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's a damn solution to do that.
Who came off worse in this documentary? Demetrius Smith, his former tour manager, or Bruce Kelly, his older brother?
First of all, why is his older brother in jail for?
I know we never got to that. They never got to that.
Are you gonna tell us anything about the jumpsuit?
We're gonna have to Google that. Matter of fact, I'm gonna Google that right now. You Google it right now.
But again, it boils down to, as we talked about, you know, when you have a certain person that feeds you. But I'll tell you one thing. I don't want to talk about who's worse. They're both bad. But R. Kelly's older brother, when he sat there and was trying to defend R. Kelly and the reason why his younger brother should have taken a rap for him and take the $100K that he'll be rich. Oh, my God.
I know.
Yo, I looked at the TV and I was like, is this for real? Is he really trying to make a point with this? You know what? R. Kelly's older brother is worse. Just for that statement.
I'm gonna say it's both, and like that part number one was crazy. The other point where he made, where he's like, you know, some guys have a preference, some guys like young teenage women. I like older women. Like, so what? Yeah, that wasn't the greatest household. Yeah, it's just, and by the way, it was for burglary.
So for burglary.
So yeah. So you're just like, yeah, wow, you know. But then listening to the tour manager speak, and the tour manager is talking about, like, the one that got me, because he enabled a lot of shit. And you can see the guilt on his face even doing his documentary. One of the things that got me where I was just like, yo, they need to charge this fool too. Where he was talking about the time spent with Kelly and Aaliyah. Like, he's talking about, like, you know, they're hanging out together, and he's like, he's smiling, like, all the interactions, you know, they have such a playful relationship. Yeah, you know, make me smile. And I'm like, what's wrong with this fool? You know, like, dude, like, what the hell? And like you said, he asked questions and shit, but like, even still to this point, like, how are you reminiscing? You know, like, how are you reminiscing about that? Like, to me, that's where I was just like, dude, like, what's wrong with you?
As he said, R. Kelly's wife said it best, you know, not to put anything against people who have trouble reading and so forth, but she's like, this guy can't read and write contracts. For him to orchestrate this whole shenanigans, this whole cult, this whole whatever, he needed a lot of help. Mm-hmm. And he definitely had a lot of help. I remember at one point they even said that he had cops on payroll. Yeah. That he knew beforehand that he was going to get indicted. So yeah, there's a lot of people that was involved in this that, you know, if R. Kelly wanted to plead anything, he can probably bring a lot of people down. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because this wasn't a small structure or whatever you want to call it.
Right. But I mean, there's a reason why this kept going on, right?
But going back to R. Kelly and Aaliyah, because I remember, I think we talked about this, R. Kelly is trying to sue Lifetime, and part of it he was saying that Lifetime knew, and he has a recording that they knew that some of the people were lying on the docuseries. And it's came out that Aaliyah's mother had came out and said there is no way that the backup singer had ever seen R. Kelly and Aaliyah having sex on the tour bus. And part of her defense was saying that her and her husband were always everywhere with their daughter when they were on tour. Mm-hmm. So nothing like that could ever happen. And you tell me, let me ask you this, Calvin. If you claim to be everywhere with your daughter, how is it that your daughter ends up marrying a man nearly double her age as a 15-year-old, wearing matching outfits and photo ops and all that stuff? Are we really to believe that? I know that they annulled the wedding, but the mere fact that they got so close, where they got married at 15 and you weren't aware of that. Are we really to believe that R. Kelly, everything we know about R. Kelly, that he wasn't touching that up? And I think a lot of times these parents, they come out and they're trying to defend because they don't want to look like they got egg on their face. And it's more for that than anything else, because you cannot tell me that you did your utmost if something like that happened under your watch. And I think it's probably the same reason why Sparkle's niece and their parents, you know, between money and between the shame of it all, they're basically are trying to scoop it under the rug.
Yeah, pretend like it never happened.
As much for them, they're doing it for them, but at the same time, you're letting this monster get away. And that's the thing. A lot of people, I know they said he had non-disclosure agreements, whatever the case, but a lot of people just didn't want to end up throwing egg in their own face in order to get him. And I think that's probably the reason why. And don't forget, he had tapes of all these people.
Yeah, wow, yeah.
And you imagine the leverage he has on these. I mean, the psychological leverage already. But then to know that he has these tapes, and this could be elite. Yo, that's the way he. That's part of the reason why he got away with this for so long.
Let me ask you another question. What was the moment or situation in the documentary that kind of like surprised you the most?
I don't know if there's one thing. It was just the amount of stories, and just the way that. Some of these women, or some of these, you know, some of them were girls. So, I mean, I have to remember that these are 16-year-old or teenagers. And how I thought as a teenager, as a grown person, is two different things. Just to hear the psychological warfare where he would starve these people for, like, days at a time.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Like... that, like the psychological warfare that he was doing, more so than the physical, just the training where they have to call him daddy, where they have to look at the wall when people walk by them, can't look at people in the eye, the starving of them, like all that to me just I was beside myself. I think the thing that surprised me the most, where that was definitely the more shocking, but the thing where I wasn't as aware, I always knew R. Kelly was married. And during this, when this happened in 2002, I was like, what the hell is going on with his wife?
Mm.
Like, how is this all going down and this guy is married with kids? And then to find out through the doc series how she was basically alienated
from the whole thing.
She had of the whole thing. Like she was completely clueless of what was happening. And basically he had her trained the same way where she had a knock before she entered the room. And then when she talked about delivering her child and then watching on TV that R. Kelly's being indicted for
child pornography.
And almost dropping her newborn child. Like, part of me always figured that she knew, like, she must have known, or maybe she was like a Stefan wife and just elected not to look the other way. But at least, you know, obviously this is through one lens, but it sounds like in, you know, when you look at the docuseries, she was completely unaware. With him having all the, like, as crazy of a life he has, and he was able to actually keep that away from his family, I didn't even think that was possible.
You almost forgot he was married, to be honest with you.
Like, yeah, I know.
Like, watching the documentary, I was like, oh, yeah, he was married. That's right. Like, I actually forgot. I actually forgot that he was even married and he had kids and all that stuff. Well, the kids I kind of knew, but I just basically forgot he got married. That he was.
It's funny because I knew he was married because I remember this happening and I was like, "Yo, how come we haven't heard Like, we haven't heard a quote, a nada out of this woman. Then you watch this film, and he's like, yo, he has this girl on the tour bus, like, yo, get on this tour bus. She has no idea where it's going, and it's, like, taking her across state lines so she can be, like, cooped up in a house. Like, this guy had an operation.
Yeah, a fully functional operation at that. Like, I sent you an a link recently about Kerry Kelly. It went viral, but he had an interview where he was talking about how his situation where him and Robert got molested, and it turned out they got molested by their older sister. I believe her name was Teresa. I'm just trying to find the link here, but I remember, let me see here, where is it? This is courtesy of the Shade Room, but, you know, he was talking about how I'll read it actually verbatim, but he claims that he and Robert were allegedly taken advantage of by their older sister, Teresa Kelly, who was 16 at the time, and they were at ages 6 and 10. Their abuse reportedly went on for about 6 years. Kerry details how Teresa allegedly inappropriately touched them and claims that she would punish them by not allowing them to play outside or instead make them stay in the house with her, claiming that she did that strategically. So, if you looked at the documentary, of course, you know, it's sad to say, but it's almost like it's learned behavior.
You know what? And I'll say this much. I don't even want, because that little blurb that you wrote there, or that you read there, doesn't even give the real ramification than what the video entailed. And I honestly don't even want to repeat what he said his sister used to do or let them do. Because it's that vile and that disgusting and that disturbing.
Yeah, I haven't even played the Instagram video.
Oh, you haven't played it yet?
I don't want to, actually. When I saw him start to break down, I was like, I can't watch this. I can't watch this.
Yo, honestly, it affects you, right? So it makes me at least understand where R. Kelly, where this behavior originated from. Not that it gives any kind of pause to what kind of punishment that this guy deserves, anything like that. But it does give you kind of a framework foundation as to what led him here. Because they always say, like, you know, typically a lot of abusers come from an abusive household, right?
Right.
And if what his younger brother claims had that was done to him,
if that's
true, yeah. Mm-hmm. Then they definitely were abused.
As you said before, if what he says is true, this is, you know, you can see where the framework was founded on, but it's been mutated to like the ninth power, you know, at this point. But it's like I said, the whole situation is sad. It's all sad. Like it's sad. And I mean, and like I said, going back to that part where you know he's taking the blame for, you know, they tried to like pay him off to take the blame for that hit. So as I said, can you imagine going through that situation where you're still to this day, you still can't even deal with what happened to you when you're that age. And then 20 years later, here's your brother trying to throw you in the mix of molesting children.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
like what is that? Like that family's broken. You know what I mean?
Well, he even said, like his I forget what his brother's name was. He said he hadn't spoken to his older sister since like 93, like the mid 90s or something like that.
Right. So yeah, like it's like that's to tell you like the mindset of what money and power do to some people. Like they expected them to take that, but like I said, the whole situation is deplorable. You know what I mean? Like it's, you look at that and it's, as I said, I can't even play the video. I refuse to even listen to that. I'll have to take your word for it offline. You know, it's the whole situation is terrible.
The doctor from Michigan State, how many years is he serving?
Oh, is it like 100 and something years? It's like not. It's at least 99 to like 100 and something years. Or something.
All
like
I know is it's more than a life sentence.
Oh, yeah. It's like consecutive life sentences plus like 80 years or something like that.
So I'm just saying, like, there's a lot of similarities in these two things. And there's one distinctive thing that isn't. But I'm just saying that his time will come.
Well, you can see it's starting to slowly come now because, as you said, he got evicted. You know, there's new criminal investigations popping up. I know some people are scared that he might flee the country, you know. So, as you said, like it's circling around. Like the wagons are definitely circling. you know, and as they should. As we said before, like, this is something that should have happened years ago, you know. And last but not least, you know, a couple of things before we wrap up. I feel for all the victims, but, like, man, like, you know, something, another theme that, like I said, there was many things that ran that was concurrent through the whole series. But one of them was the thought of, like, the respect level for Black women. Because it takes me to a point where I think the last episode of it, where Chance the Rapper, you know, he did a couple of songs with them, and, you know, he even mentioned his reasoning, like, I just didn't believe our Black women. I didn't believe them. And I'm not throwing shade his way, but I'm just saying, like, that's the prevailing thought for a lot of people. You know, a lot of people kind of, like, swept it under the rug. But it's like, why is it that, like, and maybe this is a rhetorical question, but, like, you know, why is the Black women on the bottom of the totem pole when it comes to shit like this? You know what I mean?
I'll go one step further, though, Calvin. A lot of the fans, at least that I've talked to, they're women.
I'll take another step further, but go on.
So it's like you're not believing that your own self. Like, what does that say? And I'm not throwing shade at anybody, but it's like, we got to fix how we feel about ourselves before we expect other people to help us. You know what I mean? Because, you know, he thrived in our community. And if this happened in another community, within their own community, would that happen? And again, that's a rhetorical question. I'm not saying that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not putting myself in any pedestal higher than anybody else, but and this goes along with a lot of things. We talk about just about currency for a second. They talk about in different communities that a dollar will circulate in their community 10 times over before it leaves. Not so with the Black community. You know what I mean? And it's not like, especially in the States, that, like, their dollar is big, and the community and that demographic is influential. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But we gotta look and keep our own selves accountable when it comes to something like this. Because, yeah, you're right. It definitely gives the impression that, you know, our Black woman is at the bottom of the totem pole, but we've done that to ourselves as well too.
And I mean, some of it has to do with, like, obviously, you know, in terms of why didn't this go to court sooner? Because, you know, a lot of people got signed NDAs, as you mentioned, right? Like, nobody took them to court.
Yeah.
You know, so a lot of it has to do with that too, you know, like, show that side of the light for that. But it's just, if this is a situation where it was, like I said, again, if this is a teenage blonde girl or what have you, like, this guy was, there would not been a chocolate factory, period.
No.
Period. Dave Chappelle would have never told a joke or had a skit on the Chappelle Show about this, because he would have been long locked away, serving double lifetimes. It's a shame. It's a shame to see, like, how it all played out with that. And, you know, and I guess one of my last points I'll make is just, it's, you know, like, the whole situation, like, from, you know, the past abuse that he suffered and, you know, and inflicted on others. Some of the points in the documentary where they're talking about, you know, like, he tried to set his brother up to take the fall, which is like, I mean, I felt for the brother, because in a sense where you're looking at it, where it's like, you can see he's clearly still suffering from the ordeals that happened from when he was a kid. And then all of a sudden you're hearing your own flesh and blood is kind of throwing you under the bus, like it was you in that video, and making you kind of take that fall now. You know what I mean? Or at least try to make the attempt to do that, knowing what they both know. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
To put to see your flesh and blood now still throw you under the bus after you're dealing with your own shit. Like, it's, wow, like that. My heart went out to him too. Well, with regards to that, that's tough. Like that's and, I can't even, I mean, I can't even begin to like have an answer for that. That's tough. The whole situation is sad. It's a combination of circumstances of fame, fortune, you know, power and ego that, you know, that's added on to the pain that's been unchecked. You're giving that person, you know, like some, everybody handles those situations differently. I think the pain that R. Kelly had, you know, through the past, it kind of manifested itself into, it mutated into something that was the worst, ultimate worst case scenario. And it's a shame because, and it's a waste of talent because, and I'll say the reason why I think it's a waste of talent is just because without that dark side, like if this is just, if you take away all of this and the only flaw that he might have is that he has like a foot fetish or some shit like that. Like, Kelly, we're talking about probably the greatest musical talent of the last, what, 25 years? You know what I'm saying? Like the amount of classics that this guy created for himself and others. He revived careers. He gave them classics. Like, this guy will be forever revered as, like, one of the greatest talents that we've ever seen. You know?
And as they said it in the docuseries, this, like, this guy had church hits and he had baby-making hits. Usually that doesn't come from the same artist. You know what I mean?
No.
Like, he had music where you can put generations together and they're all rocking to it.
They're all rocking to it. And produced and wrote classics for your other favorite artists.
Yeah.
You know, too many to mention. We won't even get into all that.
No, but like, he's definitely a musical genius. But just because he's a genius in that domain doesn't mean he's a devil. He can't be a devil in another. And, right. And he's clearly seen. I mean, it's funny. People say the same thing onto a lesser, you know, level with his other Chicago Padre, with Kanye West, in a sense that musically, like he'd be able to create music like nobody's business, but he's off. His rock is in other places. And it's just like me and you. Like, we might be great at one thing, but completely off tilt in something else. And we just got to realize that these celebrities, and it's not people like me and you, we can understand that. And our expectations is lowered because of that, of what we expect or what we expect and what we want from our quote unquote celebrities, right? Mm-hmm. But the younger generation, I was going to say the younger generation, but it's so funny how some older people, we even saw it in the docuseries, where you had these ultra fans who met R. Kelly and completely put their blinders on everything else that they heard and knew about him. Mm-hmm. And that's where, you know, we have to be cognizant of that. We always have to be guarded. And not to say that we have to, you know, live life and not open up, but we can't give people carte blanche just because of what we see on TV.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Because yeah. Like I said, again, like this is somebody that we should just be revering their music for, you know, for the rest of time. And instead, like, you know, he's going to forever have that. It's almost like if this is like a painting, like a Mona Lisa painting, there's like a 20-inch gash going right across the face. Like, you can't unsee it. You know what I mean? Doesn't matter how much of hits that he put out and everything else, you can't unsee this. And unfortunately, for, I know some people that might not change it, but like, and that's, like I said, that's going to be a unique and interesting situation to see how that plays out with people. But like, it's hard to disassociate one without the other at this point. It's hard. Like, how do you, like, and I'm not even talking just a documentary, because like I said, for me, this was like, I'm talking like 15 years at least now, where I've been looking at this guy sideways. But at the same time, like, I think we're all guilty of it, because as a masses, we continue to support his music. And that in turn still continues to make
it powerful. I'll give you an example where it makes it a little bit more black and white as opposed to this gray, because you're still talking about R. Kelly the artist and R. Kelly the deviant, right? When the whole thing with Bill Cosby went down, like you did, like just about any kid of color growing up in the 80s, the Cosby Show was like part of your family. Like, the Cosby Show was in your living room.
He was America's dad. I wouldn't even put color on it. He was America's dad.
Okay, fine, exactly. America's dad. You know what I mean? He was in your living room. And, like, when the whole thing went down, I was like, yo, Heathcliff Huxtable? Like, am I actually seeing right? Like, I was just like beside myself, like, yo, I can't believe the Cosby Show, America's Dad, Heathcliff Huxtable, is drugging women, like, by the dozens. And yes, he played a character on TV, but he was so, like, that era, or that character that he played was so, I guess, monumental in the fabrication of who Bill Cosby was, at least to me, because I know, you know, when you look at his track record, I mean, by the time before he became Bill Cosby, he was a successful actor before then.
Yeah. But,
you know, that put him on a whole different path and avenue.
Mm-hmm.
He played a character. Mm-hmm. That's not him. You know what I mean?
Right.
But growing up, when we see Bill Cosby, I see Heathcliff Huxtable, because that's the character that he played for how many years that he was in my living room every Thursday night whenever that came on. So it's in a more gray, because obviously with R. Kelly, it's still R. Kelly, even though it's funny how one of the women in the docuseries was saying that R. Kelly, the artist, is completely different than who Robert is.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Robert was the devil, and that was their exact word.
Right.
Her words. And it's the same thing how we're talking about, how I'm talking about Heathcliff Huxtable and Bill Cosby, right? It's almost like split personalities that we're dealing with the R. Kelly and Robert Kelly, as opposed to R. Kelly. And what people have to realize is that it is one body, it is one person. So if you're embracing one, you're embracing the other parts of him too.
Yeah, and I understand where people have, because let's face it, like, R. Kelly has, I think the one of the biggest things that he's done is he's embedded in your memory. So it's hard for a lot of people to shake, just like it was for Bill Cosby, just for like a lot of different people who went through the situation, you know, or produce pieces of art or films or different things that, like, that when you're looking back on it now, you're like, whoa. It's tough. It's like he's embedded in your memory. So it's hard for people to shake, because there's some people out there where their wedding song was probably an R. Kelly song. You know what I mean? Like,
of course.
They're some of their favorite moments in life was associated with an R. Kelly song. So it's hard for them to shake that. So I don't want to sit back and act like, yo, like, I don't get it. I totally understand it. Like, you know, I totally get it. That's hard to shake. You know what I mean? It's hard to shake. So that's why I said it's interesting to see how people are split down the middle with this, but a large part of it is people don't want to lose the memory. That's the biggest thing. Are you willing to subdue those memories? Like, are you willing to, like, I mean, the memories happened, you can't dismiss them anymore, but, like, what do you kind of do with that? I think there's people out there that are troubled with that, you know, but that's the thing. When you're balancing the checkbook of celebrity, like, you know, for everybody's lives, like, that's part of the factor that goes along with it, unfortunately. But probably the best way I can say it, like, he's embedded in your memory. So I think people have a hard time dealing with that. And, like, it's to close, like, that's, I, like, the whole thing is just, obviously, it's a sad story. The documentary was, like I said, it wasn't totally surprising for me, but it was disturbing. But I think just overall, it's just, the whole thing is just sad. For the victims, for the enablers that enable him, is disgusting, you know, that helped him to get to this point throughout this whole time. To R. Kelly himself, like, the whole situation is sad. The family structure, everything, like, it's sad. You know what I mean? Like, it's really sad. And as a parent, you know, as you were saying, like, it touches home because of, you know, you have kids. But, like, another way it kind of touches home is, like, you really have to foundation in your household is such an important thing. You know what I mean? It's such a it's such a crucial thing, and it's something that a lot of people take for granted. Like every second and every moment is important. It's super important. It's like that. It's such a super important thing that we, a lot of people take for granted, and I think that's where everything kind of starts from. You know what I mean? So if the situation is rocky right out the gate, you know, the way you view the world is just a little different than everybody else, unfortunately, you know, and it's tough. It's really tough, man. It's sad. Like it's heartbreaking. Like it's heartbreaking watching that for everybody involved, you know, because like I said, you see the situations and it just, I think we're at the stage with the whole Time's Up in the Me Too movement where we're beginning to start to sweep out the trash. That's what's happening here in this case. But like, to me, that's just the general theme for me. The whole situation is just, it's sad and it's heartbreaking to watch.
Yeah. If anything, what can come out of this is awareness where, I mean, we know that this is not going to be the last time that something like this happens, but if anything, it evokes conversation and awareness that if there's cues in front of you that you pick up on them. I mean, you know, Lifetime is in the business to make money, and apparently this was like their best debuted show ever on their network. But if the byproduct of this, where the ugliness of the whole surviving R. Kelly is awareness, if this prevents, even if it's one other person from going through something like this, then there's a moral compass that's been achieved as well, too.
Thank you all for listening to the AV Podcast. I'm grateful for your support and for you lending me your ears. Shout out to Headley for coming on this episode and sharing his thoughts on the Surviving R. Kelly documentary. It was a hard watch, man, but the docuseries was well done, well produced. And the depths of how far R. Kelly seemingly went with his whole sexual abuse was, I mean, was mind-boggling. You know, started from the 90s, essentially. It was a running parallel to what was supposed to be an iconic music career. So as I mentioned before, this is just a sad story in all phases, all the way around. I really can't emphasize that enough. But judging from what's happening since this documentary was released, I have a feeling that we haven't seen the last of R. Kelly, you know, not in the least. Once again, I truly appreciate all of you for tuning in. Just remember that South Shore Ave is available wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can listen and subscribe on the South Shore Ave on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and Google Play. And to catch up on my entire catalog of podcast shows and the blogs when I was writing more, make sure you subscribe to SouthShoreAv.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAv.com. For Headley, this is Kyle C., and you just tuned in to the AV Podcast on South Shore Ave Radio. Until the next pod, folks, we out.